Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Under the Hoodies with Phil Kegel and Brian Shipley, the genius, the draft guru genius, Brian Shipley. Brian, how are you, friend?
Oh, I'm well, Bill. That sounds like a little bit of hyperbole, but I'm always ready to talk draft, that's for sure.
Well, no, it would be with normal humans, but you're on a different level when it comes to this stuff, Brian. And first, I should let the listeners know that I am doing the show from inside my car right now, so I have to apologize for my what's going to seem like a lack of preparation, which is basically how I do every show. But that'll only be the first like 20, 30 minutes or so. But all right, Brian. Well, we got an hour. Let's just get right into it. Well, first thing I want to ask about the two biggest names. Let's talk really quick about Marcus Mariota and of course Jameis Winston. We're not going to get into any of the Jameis Winston off the field stuff. That stuff is, you know, listen to ESPN if you want your fill of that, because they're doing quite the job of that. So Jameis Winston on the field, Jameis Winston translating on the field, his game. Brian, what do you like and dislike about Jameis as a pure quarterback in the NFL?
Well, as a pure quarterback, what I really like about Jameis is he obviously has a rocket arm. You know, there's not a throw that the NFL asks for that he can't make. And not only can he make all those throws, but he can also make them with tremendous zip on the ball. Other than that, another thing that I think that, you know, most people would like is his size. He has, you know, a big Ben Roethlisberger-like body, and I can count multiple times where, you know, a lesser-statured quarterback would get sacked, where he's able to escape and throw the ball and make a play downfield. You know, I was reading this article back when the Final Four was going on for the college football playoffs, and the Boston College D coordinator was with the writer going over this play where, you know, he said, our baddest defensive lineman, who he said doesn't miss tackles on running backs, tight ends, anybody, he goes, had a wide open shot on Jameis Winston, went to hit him, and he goes, and look at how he got knocked back, and he rewound the play over and over again for the writer. And this D lineman, who was like 6'7", 270 or so, went back about 2 feet and on the ground after he tried to hit a quarterback. I mean, that just shows you what kind of strength it is. And the, you know, the D coordinator just shook his head and he goes, there's just really no quarterbacks that would be able to take that hit, and the defensive player gets the worst end of the punishment. And then, of course, accordingly, he made a play downfield that turned out to be a big game changer in what was surprisingly a close game. So I think you have to love the size. I also think he's a sneaky good athlete. I wish that he kind of would have used his legs a bit more in college, but, you know, then again, I guess that when he was surrounded with good weapons the last few years and made so many plays with his arm, it's easy to see why he wanted to be a pocket quarterback. But I think similar to Donovan McNabb back in the day when, you know, D-Nabb decided like he just didn't want to run anymore, I almost wish that he would run a bit more as far as, you know, not design quarterback runs, but just on a 3rd and 6, seeing some open space and then running and scrambling and picking up that 7-8 yards for a first down. You know, I think he's a sneaky good athlete for a guy that big, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him run somewhat fast this week at the combine. So those are all the things I love about him. You know, as far as the drawbacks, there's two things that have really stood out to me over the last 2 years. One is I think he has a tendency to stare down receivers. You know, you see that time and time again where he kind of locks on his guy. You know, that's not to say he's not able to go through progressions, but I think sometimes he just needs to get a little bit of a quicker anticipation skills, I guess, and not wait for it, because, you know, where guys run free and wide open in college, you know, those windows are going to close tight and quick in the NFL. So I think that, you know, it'd be prudent of him to kind of get rid of the ball quicker. But what goes hand in hand with that is, you know, the last 2 years, what's really kind of scared me about him is he seems to have a real elongated release. I don't want to call it Byron Leftwich elongated release, but I think between, you know, him sometimes staring down receivers and had taken kind of a big windup in order to, you know, let that rocket arm loose. Again, we're talking about split seconds in the NFL, the difference between a good play and a bad play. So those would be my two biggest on-field questions. But I mean, again, the off-the-field stuff is, you know, there's plenty of information out there about it. I'm not sure how smart of a person he is off the field, but I do think he's a very, very smart quarterback on the field. I know he works with Trent Dilfer and Trent Dilfer's quarterback school, quarterback camp type thing, and he does seventh-level quarterback things that you want to see out of NFL quarterbacks as far as audibly diagnosing coverages, you know, all the things that, you know, sort of go unseen to the naked eye. You know, he's really good at that, and, you know, I also heard that Jimbo Fisher is huge on halftime adjustments, and James Winston has always been able to pick those up on the fly and totally, reignite a brand new game plan after halftime. So I think football smarts would be the last ask that I have in there. And, you know, overall, I think he's a very enticing package on the field. But,
right.
You know, you'd be remiss not to talk about it off the field, especially as we saw, you know, the Browns who have got to have buyer's remorse a year later with Johnny Manziel and his quote-unquote red flags.
Right. And, you know, I'm more meant, let's not get into the specifics off the field. Obviously, the off-the-field stuff is definitely a question. And I should have clarified a little better at the top of the show. Yeah, I mean, more of the specific thing. Like, I don't want to talk about the crap or, you know, the stupid internet meme that he screamed in the student union. But more, yeah, the off-the-field stuff obviously is a huge red flag when we're talking about, you know, drafting a guy. But I honestly don't think that's going to matter. I mean, I think he's going first. I think he's going to the Bucs. Do you think so?
I think he's going first, too. They seem to really have a real connection with them, unless Lovie Smith is just overnight became really good at poker and is just doing this to try to garner, you know, someone to trade up to the first overall spot. Then I think that, you know, they're kind of a perfect match. And I'm sure you might have saw the report, too, that one of the reasons they didn't go with Mark Trestman, who you and I both love as a offensive mind, as their new offensive coordinator, was they disagreed on who they thought was the top quarterback draft-eligible prospect. So I feel like, you know, if you're reading the tea leaves, it seems like they're pretty much all in on Jameis Winston. So
right.
As far as the off-the-field stuff, I can't think of a better coach to sort of mentor and manage a young man than Lovie Smith, who, his players love him and really seem to want to go through a brick wall for him. So I do think that from a maturity sense, that could really be a nice fit.
Right, yeah, and yeah, there's not – you don't hear much bad stuff about Lovie from any players, you know, present, you know, former, and it doesn't look like that – or it looks like they are going to take Winston in. I mean, as far as, you know, he's the new Tony Dungy. Like, he's the player whisperer. If you want to, you know, call it that. Honestly, overall, I think he'll be fine. You know, he does silly knucklehead things off the field. Johnny Manziel is, I think, a completely different animal. Like, his partying habits and his just, you know, everything. I mean, Johnny Manziel, when he was redshirting, got into a bar fight or something and got punched in the head or something, like, with his buddies. You know, he was as an 18-year-old redshirt, just guy on campus. So I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, a good comp with Manziel Winston. And that's not what you were doing. I know what you meant, but the people that are making that comparison, I honestly think it's a little silly. I think Winston, he'll grow up. I mean, let's not forget Peyton Manning had a sexual harassment for mooning like a physician's assistant or something like that when he was an 18-year-old kid. Eli Manning got a DUI for crying out loud. I mean, these are just knucklehead young kid things. I think he'll grow out of it. There's nothing to me anyway that shows anything but just him being an idiot, which, you know, goes away with maturity. So
yeah.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, the one thing that I agree with all that for most of the things, I think that, you know, the crab legs, him yelling that thing at the union, I just don't care. What I will say, though, is what, you know, sort of has me worried is if you ever get a chance, read a real nice investigative piece by the New York Times as far as to what happened that night of the sexual assault charge. And, you know, they really went down to Tallahassee and dug deep. And, you know, by the end of it, you can be the judge of it however you like, but it really doesn't shed very good light on either Winston or the Tallahassee Police Department. So that would be my biggest thing. But You know, the important thing to remember is NFL teams are going to be working with even more information than what the New York Times top reporters are. So I'm sure
that's
number one. You know, there's even more to the story than what we know.
Right, and then that is a huge, serious situation. I do remember there's something, but I always thought that was more of an indictment on the Tallahassee police rather than Winston. Them sort of trying to make it go away, but the situation, the actual, for lack of a better term, sexual assault or rape, whatever you want to call it. I thought that was more that didn't necessarily happen the way that she stated, but I'm definitely going to read it. I'm going to look it up after the show, and I'm definitely going to read it. But anyway, you're listening to Under the Hoodies. I'm Bill Kegel, joined by Draft Genius. I don't want to say guru because I think you exceed the term guru. And that's thrown around too much. Todd McShay gets labeled a guru, and you're better than him. So let's talk about Marcus Mariota. The Eagles, obviously the whole, Oregon connection with Chip Kelly and Marcus Mariota. Chip Kelly recruited him, et cetera, et cetera. Eagles trying to move up from the 20th pick to most likely the second pick to draft him. That system is a perfect fit for him, in my opinion. You will know better. Because as our draft genius, and I'm definitely going to keep throwing that out. But you watch more college football than I do. Does his skill set translate to Chip Kelly's system in the NFL? It's a lot easier in college, obviously, with the speed of the game. But does his skill set translate to Chip Kelly's version of his offense in the NFL?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be the ideal fit for him as far as, as far as them having as successful a career as possible. I think that would be a match made in heaven if the Eagles could somehow pull it off to trade up and get him. You know, he's just so difficult to really judge just how good he is. Like, I think I talk to you about this every year with Oregon players. I mean, if you watch an Oregon game, and it looks like every player on the field runs a sub-4 240, and, they're all just quick as hell and just big-time playmakers, and, the stats are so misleading. That's really kind of hard to get a read on their players. But, what I do think about Mariota is sort of like what I said with Winston, is he can make every throw the NFL calls for. He has a really good arm. By all accounts, he's an absolute stand-up guy that's going to be, terrific in the classroom as far as, learning how to read defenses, learning the different nuances of the playbook and this and that. And he's also a really, sneaky good athlete, as you might expect from an Oregon quarterback that, when they like to run the read option and whatnot. So I think that in his first few years in the NFL, while he's getting his feet wet and becoming more of a pocket NFL-style passer, assuming he doesn't go to Chip Kelly and the Eagles, I think he'll still be able to add value to his team by chipping in, 50, 60 rushing yards a week, which, those are hidden yards as far as I'm concerned during the league season, and, it can help keep the chains moving. The number one question I have on him is, other than the obvious going from that Oregon offense to a more traditional attack, is I found this just absolutely jarring that during his time at Oregon, he never did a cadence or a snap count or really did any talking at the line whatsoever. It's all done, with their feet, with a silent count, which is great. It's almost like they run, a two-minute offense the entire game. And, as such, he's never really done many audibles. He's never really changed the protections much. He's never tried to draw on the defensive linemen off sides. And I think these are some of the hidden skills that sort of separate quarterbacks. I mean, the best of the best deal 10 to 15 yards a week just by drawing defenses off sides. I think there is something to a guy having that right voice and that right, confidence at the line as far as, getting the team in the right protections, getting the right audibles going, this and that. So that does worry on me. Now, that's not to say, for all we know, he could be terrific at it, and he's certainly a skill that can be learned. But I just find that jarring that a guy that's about to be, a probable top 10 quarterback draft pick in the NFL has never even tried to draw on a defense offsides in college. So I think that, he's going to be great in the classroom, but I also think there's going to be a lot more work as far as being an NFL quarterback with him than your typical guy. Especially when you consider the fact that you know, he's never really been under center. He's always done the one step back, cradle, rock, pass that you get out of the spread teams. So I think that, you know, if you're a quarterback coach, this is exactly what you're looking for, a guy with all the talent in the world, a guy that's willing to learn, a guy that's coachable. But you also have to almost start at, you know, quarterbacking 101 to get him up to par to be an NFL quarterback. So, you know, for that reason, I like him a lot. But I think an ideal situation for him would be to go to a team with a bridge quarterback so he doesn't have to play one right away, can learn the nuances of the position, you know, get extremely comfortable with the new system he's going to be in, and then maybe end of the year or start of the 2016 season, then, you know, he'll be ready to take over the reins, because after all, he is just 21 years old.
Right, I don't know if Nick Foles is going to be thrilled with being the bridge quarterback. I don't think Sanchez is going to stay there either. And that's just all hypothetical if they do trade up. I mean, it would take a bigger than Robert Griffin type haul. So I think to get even to the second pick to draft him, I think Tennessee's going to sort of demand the world from him if that's the case. And I can't even imagine what they're going to be asking for the number of first round picks. You know, the very valuable second round picks. In addition to the first round pick. So I don't know, is he worth what they would most likely have to give up to get him?
Well, I think in this unique situation he might be, just because I feel like we've seen you know, what Chip Kelly's offense can be, and at times it's just looked unbelievable. And I think that if you can get that athletic quarterback that can add that one extra element and make the defense have to always be, you know, alert of the counteractions and whatnot, then I think that they could take it to a whole new level, whether that's Mariota or someone else, you know, whatever. But we've seen Chip Kelly, you know, sort of really do wonders with two quarterbacks that are not ideal fits for his offense, I guess we could say. And so,
right,
you know, when you see Nick Foles and Mark Sanchez being able to pick up 8 yards on a read option because it just schemes so perfectly, now imagine what a guy who's you know, running ability has been compared favorably to Colin Kaepernick's. I mean, it's
right,
very enticing to see what he can do with an athlete. So in most situations, I don't think it would be, especially when you have, you know, at least a solid young quarterback like Nick Foles on your team. But for the Eagles, you know, I do think that could be awfully enticing. I think it's important to note that Chip Kelly won a power struggle with their longtime GM out in Philly this offseason. So he has final say over personnel. So it would not shock me at all if they try to pull it off if they see him slipping a bit on draft day.
Right. And I don't know. I do worry how, I guess, crippling that could be if he doesn't work out. But I guess if there was a team where the marriage would be perfect, you're right, it definitely is Mariota with Chip Kelly. I mean, it definitely suits his skill set. All right, real quick, last thing about Mariota. What do you think, or who do you think is his best NFL comp? Is it Kaepernick, or is he just a very, very proper Johnny Manziel? I know he's a little bigger than Manziel, but, I mean, the running ability, the arms, that kind of stuff.
God, I hope this does not get taken out of context, but he reminds me of a young Aaron Rodgers, just because he has that charisma. Aaron Rodgers is a sneaky, terrific athlete that can really run. And Aaron Rodgers can make all the throws that you could possibly want, and he can make it too. Am I saying he's the next Aaron Rodgers? Of course not. If he was, then I would say every team should be trying to trade up to number one to get him.
Oh, God, yes.
But I'm just saying, if you're going to have an Aaron Rodgers starter kit, it would look a lot like Marcus Mariota.
All right, let's transition to running back. I mean, running backs this year are, you know, that's the prize of the draft. Like, there's so many, and there's so many good ones. Not the prize of the draft, bad wording. And maybe I'm overthinking my terminology, but there's just it's saturated with good running backs this year. Other than Todd Gurley, who I know is your favorite, I mean, even with two busted ACLs, he's the best running back prospect, you know, since Peterson, by a lot of accounts. Other than Gurley, who do you like best in this draft?
Oh, Bill, I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm just so excited as a guy that loves running backs that, to me, this is the second best position group in the entire draft this year after defensive linemen. And I mean, this running back class is just loaded. And I remember we had a conversation last year on the podcast where I thought, you know, last year there's no first round picks, and this year I think I made the prediction that there would be three or four, which I might have been a little bit too high on that side of it. But I think that what we're seeing is everybody says the position is being devalued. You know, I think it might be true for guys where, you know, you can get similar production, you know, from a guy later in the draft. You know, somebody that's really solid but doesn't have special ability. So I think you're going to see a couple running backs go really early this year due to special ability. And, you know, although Jeremy Hill and Carlos Hyde both had rookie years, terrific rookie years a year ago, I mean, I don't even think you could compare last year's running backs class to this year. It's just so good and deep. So anyways, your original question, though, after Todd Gurley, I think the most enticing prospect after him is another guy that just tore up the college ranks and really there's nothing left that he could prove at the college level. That's Melvin Gordon from Wisconsin. This guy, to me, reminds me of Jamal Charles, where he's just super fast, and despite kind of not looking like the biggest guy in the world, runs for some power, can catch passes out of the backfield, and most importantly, is always looks like he's about ready to take a simple screen pass or a simple run, get into the second level, and turn what most running backs would have a solid play into a huge game-breaking type of play. So after him, that's who I would probably take next. Next is a guy who I really, really like a lot, but whose stock has kind of dropped, I'd say, from his freshman year. It's almost like a thing with the Alabama running backs where they just look so amazing as freshmen that you think that they're just going to keep getting better, and then they don't. And then, you know, either devalue or overvalue them, I guess, by the time they get to be draft eligible. But that's T.J. Yeldon, whom I've just always loved since he walked onto that Alabama campus. He's 6'2", 221 pounds, kind of a real sleek build. And I think the best comparison for me for him is a young Clinton Portis, where Clinton Portis was tall, skinny, but surprisingly ran with a lot of power and had that, you know, game-breaking speed. I think Portis is probably a bit faster than Yeldon was, but I think Yeldon's a bit more powerful. And like all Alabama running backs, you know, he's played in that pro-style system. He knows how to pick up a blitz. You know, he can catch passes out of the backfield. And what I like, too, is he doesn't have as much wear and tear on his body as a Gurley or a Melvin Gordon does, because every year Alabama's going to recruit one of the best three running backs in the nation. So he split carries for his entire 3 years. He's coming off an injury-plagued season, but he showed some toughness to me by, you know, kind of grinding it out with kind of a nasty ankle injury. Do I think he'll go in round one? No, but in my opinion, he is a first-round prospect, and I think whoever gets him is going to get a real solid franchise back. The next guy who I think most people would have rated after Gurley and Melvin, excuse me, Gordon and Melvin Gurley is Amir Abdullah from Nebraska. I mean, he was a ton of fun to watch. It's sort of really the focal point of their offense because, you know, anybody that's watched Nebraska the last 5 years knows that they can't pass to save their lives. He reminds me of a Ray Rice type back, you know, kind of sort of like that bowling ball that just is always moving his feet, so hard to bring down, always making big plays. I like him, but I don't love him. I don't think he's worth a first-round pick. I think he's one of these guys that was going to be a better college back than they were an NFL back. But, you know, at the same time, you really can't go wrong with the amount of production he enjoyed there. The next guy who's really gaining steam is J.I. I know I'm mispronouncing that, from Boise State. And this guy, if you like running backs that run hard and grind out every single yard possible on the field, then JJJ is your type of guy. I mean, he averaged 6 yards per carry last year at Boise State. He had some highlight reel runs where, you know, basically through pure and simple effort and hustle, he was able to turn nothing into these, you know, gorgeous Sports Center type highlight reel plays. He also has really good secondary skills, sort of like Doug Martin did coming out of Boise State too, in the sense that he's already a solid pass protector and can really catch passes out of the backfield. So I think teams that like, you know, versatility of their running backs are really going to be attracted to him. And a couple other guys I wanted to touch on. Duke Johnson from the University of Miami has been another player that's just been sensational college career. You know, they've had quarterback issues until that true freshman stepped in this year and started playing well down the stretch. Last year, excuse me, 2 years ago, everybody knew who was going to get the ball. And before they got hurt, you know, they're loading up the box against Duke Johnson, and yet he was still grinding out yards, making big plays, averaging nearly 6 yards a carry. I just think this guy is tough as nails and a terrific football player. a lot of people think he's just going to be a third down, scat back, screen guy in the NFL. To me, that's the floor. I think at the very worst, this guy could have a Kevin Falk-like impact in the NFL. I personally think, though, that even though he's 200 pounds or so and not very tall, I think the guy's tough as nails and does a really nice job running between the tackles. I do think he is an every down back. And if you know he gets in the right system, I think he's the type of guy that you can ride him for 20, 25 touches a game. And then for a couple sleepers who I really, really like, one, David Cobb from the University of Minnesota, 5'9", 230 pounds. Excuse me, 5'10", 230 pounds. One of my all-time favorite running backs, Bill, and another guy from the University of Minnesota, Marion the Barbarian, Marion Barber. He kind of reminds me a bit of him. Minnesota had a surprisingly great year this year and was in contention for the Big Ten championship. Excuse me, at least to go to the Big Ten championship game up until the final week of the season. And he was a major reason why. He's a little sketchy as far as catching the ball and doing some of the secondary stuff that you need from a running back. But if you're looking for an Alfred Morris type in between the tackles pounder, he's your guy. And then two other guys real quick, Josh Robinson. Zapp Prescott, the quarterback for Mississippi State, really got most of the pub last year as for why Mississippi State went from being an afterthought in the SEC to a national title contender. As far as I'm concerned, Josh Robinson was their best player on offense. He's not going to wow anybody at the combine. He's short and kind of slow. He kind of looks like Sean Green, which is obviously not the most appealing compliment you can give a guy.
not at all.
Always finds a way to break tackles, keep getting extra yards, and he's just tough as hell. He's like a bowling ball, and he's not as explosive as him. He's not nearly as good as a receiver as him. But he's got some Mo Jones-Drew to his game, and I think for a team that runs the right system in the fifth, sixth round are going to get an absolute steal and a guy that, as far as I'm concerned, has the potential to be a 1,200, 1,300-yard back in the NFL. And then finally, another guy whose stock has really, really fallen after a poor senior year is Mike Davis from the University of South Carolina. Heading into the season, I thought that he would challenge Gordon, Gurley, and others for that, and T.J. Yeldon to be a first-round pick. This year is up and down. He lost some playing time to some younger backs, but he has all the tools you look for in an NFL running back as far as size, strength, speed, ability to catch balls out of the backfield, tackle-breaking ability. I'm not sure what his issue was this year, but I could see him having a good combine if he's in good shape. And, having a good offseason could really do a lot to rehabilitate his draft stock and get him back up in that second day conversation.
Real quick, I just wanted to point out that you reminded me of Maurice Jones-Drew's, and any comp to that guy is great because, and I'm learning a lot. Like, I don't want the listeners to think that I know anything. I literally know very little, and I rely on the combine for my draft information. And, of course, tech messages from Brian Shipley here. And this is all good stuff. And the Maurice Jones-Drew thing, off topic real quick. Do you think Maurice Jones-Drew is single-handedly responsible for ending Sean Merriman's career?
I think the very least he's responsible for hurting Sean Merriman's feelings because that was the greatest block I think I've ever seen a running back make.
Yes, me too. And the size difference, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, is what, 9 inches?
Maurice
Jones-Drew is literally 9 inches shorter than Sean Merriman, and then laid him out.
And again, this Josh Robinson isn't as explosive, but that's the type of competitor that he is where, there is just play after play where, a lesser back would go down, and he just never stops moving his feet and fighting for extra yards. And he was, without question, one of my five favorite players to watch in college football this year. He was just awesome to watch. I was glad he went pro because I think that if he had gone back, he would have been just used to death next year on Mississippi State's team. He might not be a high pick, but, my God, if I needed a running back late, this would be a guy I'd be all over.
Nice. I'm salivating listening to all this stuff with the Giants with a very early pick. And I don't know about a glaring hole at running back. Rashad Jennings is a nice back. Andre Williams is exactly who said he would be. And he got a little bit more play than we thought he would. So I'm salivating at adding another playmaker to go on that offense in the early first round. So, all right. Well, you touched on it. I'm going to sort of skip over receiver, and if we have time, we'll come back to them. But the defensive line. Now, this is a very, very important in this draft, like you pointed out. This is like you said, more than running back. The most talent is at that position. Give us your favorites, and give us a couple comparisons.
Without question, my favorite is, you know, everybody's favorite, and that is, of course, Leonard Williams from USC, the defensive tackle. You know, he's only 20 years old, 6'5", just about 300 pounds. What I like most about him is, A, the guy's tough as nails and loves football. B, he's proven he can play at a high level through injuries, which I think is an important trait in the NFL because it's inevitable you're going to be hurt at some point in the season. Are you still able to answer the bell and go out and give your team, be an asset for your team? What's shocking to me is, as a true sophomore, as a 19-year-old, when he first started getting everybody's draft radar after such a dominant season under the tutelage of maybe the best D-line coach in the nation, and Ed Orgeron, who was their interim head coach for a while. He was terrific, despite playing the torn labrum. So he was at, we'll say, 60-70%. I mean, think about a torn labrum for a defensive tackle. Like, how difficult it would be to do your job with a torn labrum, just how much pain that is. So despite having that torn labrum, he was still able to play well enough to be on everybody's first-round draft radar the next year and just have a fantastic season. So, you know, he was a guy I really wanted to watch this year, and then, of course, he did not disappoint. Early in the season, he suffered a high ankle sprain against Stanford, which anybody who's had a high ankle sprain knows that's extremely painful, especially when you're carrying 300 pounds above that ankle. And yet, he still answered the bell every week. He still played terrific. And, you know, he has the kind of athleticism where, yeah, he's a D-tackle by trade, but, you know, if you wanted to stick him at DN, yeah, I think he would get by just fine. You know, if you want to put him in the 3-4, 4-3, it doesn't matter. Just find a place and get this guy. You know, he's been compared to guys like Gerald McCoy and Richard Seymour. I'm going to comp him to somebody who I think is not as nearly as sexy a name, but I think the people that really know football that remember how good this guy was early in his career will kind of like this. And that's Tommy Harris, the former defensive tackle out of the University of Oklahoma, who was a first-round pick for the Chicago Bears years ago. And he was sort of that three-penetrating technique stud that kind of made Lovie Smith's offense go. You know, of course, he never got as much attention as Urlacher, Briggs, and, Pina Tillman and others. But, you know, he was really, really a terrific player before injury set him back. And he reminds me of a better Tommy Harris. And to me, that's a terrific player and probably the best player available in the draft this year. Go ahead, Bill.
No, go ahead. I'll let you keep going. Nope, go.
As far as edge rushers, what I find interesting is there's a lot of edge rushers that don't weigh as much as an NFL team is typically going to like their edge rushers. And I think that, you know, as the old Bill Parcells saying is, you can only draft what the college has developed for you. And I think in the NFL, you want your pass rusher to be a bit heavier so they can still be stout against the run, you know, still set the edge, still provide leverage. Whereas in college, with all these spreads, you know, you kind of want them to be lighter so that even when they're not getting after the passer, because, you know, when a team's throwing the ball in just a matter of seconds with bubble screens or a quick snap and getting rid of it, kind of minimizes the presence of a great pass rusher. So you kind of want a guy that's a little bit light on his feet, can be versatile, he can move around to get matchups, and he can run around and make plays when they run, you know, read options or bubble screens. He can still help out in the tackling department. So a couple of guys who I think are going to absolutely tear up the combine and really look good in shorts and a shirt and have really bright futures if they can, in my opinion, put on some extra weight and still sustain that explosive ability, would be Randy Gregory, the DN from the University of Nebraska, and Shane Ray, the DN from the University of Missouri. I think Shane Ray especially could have sort of drop some jaws at the combine. He's only 245 pounds, though, and he's only 6'3", whereas Randy Gregory, 6'6", 245, so they're about the same weight. With Gregory, you look at that size and you think, all right, you know, he can put on, should be able to put on some extra weight on that frame. So I think after Williams, Gregory would probably be my favorite, you know, actual edge rusher. Shane Ray is awfully interesting. Dante Fowler is another guy that was a big-time recruit coming out of high school, 6'2", 260 pounds. He's more of that, you know, has the size more that you look for in an NFL defensive end. I think he'll be a first-round pick. He, you know, he really developed nicely under the tutelage of I'm drawing a blank on their coach's name. They just got fired, but, you know, a defensive-minded coach, Will Muschamp, excuse me. And then lastly, the guy that I really like a ton is Vic Beasley, 6'2", 235 pounds from the University of Clemson. I was shocked he did not come out a year ago. You know, he had just a monster game when they upset the University of Georgia and Todd Gurley early in the season when they both looked like legitimate national title contenders. This is 2 years ago I'm talking. This year, you know, so much attention was his way. The team wasn't as good, so, you know, he wasn't in so many you know, shootouts or where his team's ahead and he has the opportunity to just go down and bucket and get after the quarterback. But this guy is just explosive. You worry that he's only 235 pounds. He's awfully skinny, but I think he's another guy that's going to tear up the combine. And if you think Bruce Irvin was a first-round pick, then I think you absolutely have to put this guy in the first round. And if he gets the right situation where, you know, a defensive coordinator that really knows how to use him, and I think he could really be a big-time third-down rusher with a chance to be much more than that as he puts down a little bit more muscle.
Only Pete Carroll thought that Bruce Irvin was the first-round pick. I just want to put that out there.
True.
Yeah, you were so low on him, I remember. And I remember the absolute absurdity you thought that pick was. So, and, you know, good call on you because he's a very good situational pass rusher, which – you know, if you're looking, you know, you're using your 15th overall pick, maybe you go a different direction. But,
right, exactly. Actually, I forgot about two other guys real quick, Bill.
No, go ahead.
Rick Armstead. Now, this guy looks like a prototypical NFL D lineman. I think his best fits in the 3-4. He's super long, almost 6'8", almost 300 pounds. He's going to be the first-round pick that a casual fan's going to hate because they're just going to look at his stats and see that he has minimal sacks, minimal tackles for loss, this and that. Type of player that allows the pass rushers on the team to, you know, sort of like the Justin Smith-Alden Smith relationship the past few years in San Francisco. You know, I think he's going to be the type of guy that does the dirty grunt work, you know, penetrates, pushes the pocket, gets some penetration on rundowns and makes his linebackers and pass rushers look even better than they are. And then one of my favorite players in the draft, just because this guy is, for lack of a better term, just a fat bastard that really can push the pocket. And that's Danny Shelton, the nose tackle, D tackle from University of Washington. He's 6'2", 345 pounds, but if you think he's 345 pounds, then let me sell you a few penny stocks while I'm at it. But, you know, he's the type of guy like a Haloti Ngata or a Vince Wilfork that can handle the weight, still be light on their feet, and make some big-time plays, not, you know, just be more than just a run stuff. I think he's a three-down player in the NFL and a surefire top 20 pick.
You're listening to Under the Hoodie. This is Bill Cagle, joined by genius Brian Shipley. All right, Brian. we'll get to a couple. Let's go back to receiver. Amari Cooper's getting all the attention, but who – what do you like about him? What do you like or dislike about him? And then who was another intriguing prospect?
I think the most intriguing player in this draft period, you know, I'm sure most people would think it's Jameis Winston, but to me it's Kevin White. I think that Kevin White might have been the most dominant player in college football this year, and if his team didn't go on a tailspin, it would have been a better, we'll say, national title contending team. I think that this guy would have ran away with the Heisman. I mean, he was absolutely dominant from the University of West Virginia. What makes him so interesting to me is I had no idea who Kevin White was coming into this year, and I think very few people did. I mean, he's the ultimate, you know, one-year wonder that sort of came out of nowhere. But, I mean, if you're going to be able to come out of nowhere, this is the way to do it, is just to come in and just totally dominate college football. He's coming from the same offense, Dana Holgerson's, who, you know, was really responsible for, I don't want to say responsible because those both these guys were talented in their own right, but it's the same offense that Dez Bryant flourished in at Oklahoma State, the same offense that Justin Blackman flourished in at Oklahoma State. It's a really innovative, pass-happy attack. But, I mean, he put up unbelievable stats, 6'3", 210 pounds. He reminds me a lot of Alshon Jeffrey from the Bears, but maybe with a little bit more explosive ability. You know, he looks like the type of guy that's just going to be able to come in, run, that you can throw the contested balls to, that's going to jump out of the building and go get it. I think he's going to end up being a top 10 pick, which if you would have bet me $100 a year ago, if you would be even a first or second day pick, I'd have said, I don't even know who you're talking about. I'll take that bet right now. So I think he's extremely interesting. I can't wait to see how he does at the combine. Amari Cooper, what I like about him is he was a big-time recruit coming out of high school, and he just looks so calm out there. Like, he makes plays, and sometimes you just wonder, like, how he's able to be so dominant. You know, he's not some 6'5" Calvin Johnson or Demaryius Thomas that you can tell just wins with his size and, you know, is able to get separation, jump up, and go get it. He's only 6'1". But despite that, you know, he's not like a Sammy Watkins where you say, all right, Sammy Watkins isn't very tall, but you can watch him on the screen and tell he's probably the best athlete or at least the fastest guy out on the field on any given Saturday or Sunday. And although Cooper is in his own right, really terrific athlete, you know, he's not a Sammy Watkins level athlete. Yet every week, everybody knew who Alabama was going to try to get the ball to in the passing attack, and he was able to make play after play. So I think that if you have the right, what's the word I'm looking for, I guess, the right expectations for him, I think he's going to be really good. Do I think he's as good as any of the top receivers last year, like Sammy Watkins, Odell Beckham Jr., Mike Evans? No, I don't. He reminds me of a smaller Andre Johnson that just, you know, is a really shrewd route runner, knows how to create just enough separation with his body for his quarterback to get a nice target, you know, has some really nice run after the catch and break tackle ability. So he reminds me of a more diminutive Andre Johnson. I'm sure he'll probably be a top 10 pick, but I will put that with a qualifier that I think in, you know, a year ago, you know, I don't think he would have been in the same class as those other three receivers we mentioned. And I'm saying that from the standpoint of what I thought of him last year, not, you know, playing revisionist history after seeing how
right.
They play their rookie year. And then two guys who I absolutely love when we're talking about on-field ability. One is Doriel Green Beckham, who, similar to Jameis Winston, has some major red flag issues. This guy was such a highly coveted and high recruit out of the state of Missouri 3 years ago that Missouri actually got a chartered private jet to go land, like, you know, within the same vicinity he was in on the day before signing day to close the deal with him because they wanted to keep him in state. But, of course, every big player in the nation was offering a scholarship. Again, he wasn't the top receiving recruit. He was the top overall recruit. He's 6'6", almost 230 pounds, but can run like a deer. You know, he kind of had a disappointing freshman year, and then he was terrific as a sophomore at the University of Missouri. Keep in mind, they made it all the way to the SEC championship game and almost pulled an upset over Auburn. And he was a big reason why, and he looked like he was just going to take the next step in what would have been his junior year this year. But then he had off-the-field issues where, you know, he was charged with pushing the friend of his girlfriend downstairs when he came over and had, I won't call it a domestic dispute, but a heated argument with his girlfriend. He also failed several drug tests, which I really don't care about. That was all for marijuana. And he got kicked off the team, transferred to Oklahoma, and although he's unable to play for him this year because transfers have to sit out a year, he was able to practice with them and by all accounts is in great football shape. I think if this guy had Amari Cooper type, you know, as clean and spotless off the field track record as Cooper, I think you're talking about this guy potentially challenging Leonard Williams to go number one overall. Of course, though, that's not the case. So I could see him going in the top 20. I could see him going in the third round. Like, I really don't know in the wake of the Ray Rice, Greg Hardy, and, you know, all the domestic dispute scandals, how much teams might penalize him for having that type of charge in his past. So on the field, he's a 6'6" monster, a matchup nightmare. and I think a future number one wide receiver. But again, NFL teams that know a lot more about his past are going to have to make the decision of when the risk is greater, or excuse me, when the reward is greater than the risk. And then I think that one of the most talented players in the draft no one's really talking about right now is Devontae Parker from Louisville. And I think a big reason why is he missed the majority of the season with an injury. And then he came back. I remember watching him in the Notre Dame game where I think he had like 220 yards receiving. And this guy is just explosive. He's 6'3". He attacks you at every level of the field. He's a nice vertical deep threat. He runs the, you know, short and the intermediate routes very well. He's another one of these guys that you can just throw it up and let him go get it. I think he's going to be a big-time number one NFL receiver, another top 20 pick. And I think that this guy could be the ideal fit to go with Odell Beckham for your New York Giants. And then two other guys I really wanted to get to. One was Devin Funchess, University of Michigan. Obviously struggled through some quarterback issues the last 2 years. He looks like Calvin Benjamin's brother. He's 6'5", 235 pounds. He was actually a tight end his first 2 years, but I'm putting the words tight end in finger quotes, of course. Nobody can see me do that. But this year, he went into Brady Hoke's office. He said he's ready to be a leader. And, of course, there's nothing more stoic to a Michigan, we'll say, ball catcher than wearing the number one jersey, which, you know, is reserved for the best of the best, and usually at the wide receiver position. So he went out wide and just posed matchup problems to everybody that they went up against. He does remind you a lot of Calvin Benjamin because he's able to use his body, make the tight contested catches. But I think he's a much better run-after-the-catch player than Calvin Benjamin. I find him very interesting, and I think, again, if you get him with the right quarterback that's not going to be afraid to throw it in to contested coverages, I think he could step in next year and be, you know, have a terrific rookie season just like Calvin Benjamin did. And then one other guy, Jalen Strong from the University of Arizona State. Again, 6'3", 215, was a big-time playmaker for him. To kind of beat the same drum as I said with other guys, teams knew that this was the one weapon you had to take away. Despite that, you know, every Saturday he made play after play. He's terrific in the open field running with the ball. The only question that I have with him is how fast he is. So I think the 40-yard dash of the combine is going to be huge for him. And then two guys that I just wanted to add in who I don't really like them as far as draft prospects, but guys that I hope get in the right situation because I just thought they were so much fun to watch on Saturdays this year is, Lockett, the wide receiver from Tyler Lockett, the wide receiver from Kansas State. He is about a buck 80, 180 pounds, soaking wet, tough as nails, made play after play for an underappreciated and underrated Kansas State team. And Jamison Crowder from the University of Duke, who's, I can't even think of another University of Duke receiver really ever. And this guy was terrific for him. Again, all levels of the field is a deep threat. Intermediate routes, slants, bubble screens, they threw it to him, you know, all the time in the red zone and on first downs. Everybody knew this was a go-to guy. Of course, the problem with him is he's 5'8", 175 pounds. So to me, that screams at best a really good slot receiver. So I don't think the NFL is going to be as high on him as his resume of college games would suggest.
Real quick to get back to Amari Cooper. When I watched him, I saw basically a shiftier Reggie Wayne.
I like that comp a lot, actually.
Yeah, it just you kind of hit the nail on the head there with just. It looks so effortless with him. It's just like it kind of that's what he kind of reminded me of, because Reggie Wayne never really jumped off the page as a super athlete. All the guy did is just get open and catch balls. Like that was, and that's all I really see out of Amari Cooper. But Amari Cooper, I would say, a little bit better of an athlete. But I think the diminutive of Andre Johnson probably the best comp I've heard. I haven't heard that from anybody else. But that makes a lot of sense as well.
Yeah, I like that Reggie Wayne comp a lot, too. And sort of like with Reggie Wayne, too, is they get open by being calm, terrific route runners, using their body to create that little bit of space. And I think one of the prevailing themes that I talked about a lot of these guys like Parker, Green, Beckham, Funchess is you know, what you might want to call jump ball guys, back shoulder fade guys. I don't know if Amari Cooper is necessarily that guy that you're just going to throw it up to and let him go get it all the time like some of the other guys because of his size. Just like I don't think you would send Reggie Wayne out for those type of routes. But that doesn't mean that he can't be equally or more effective than, you know, some of the aforementioned guys just based on his, you know, right route running prowess, you know, ability to read defense, ability to get open, ability just to, you know, make plays on Sundays.
Right, and we're going to talk more, actually. We have about 10 minutes left. Are you good for another 10 minutes or so, approximately? Say 5 to 10 minutes?
Yes, sir. You want
to
go over some combine snubs real quick? Because I did have a few guys that I thought were screwed.
Yes, sir.
The biggest combine snub that I thought was Cody Riggs from the University of Notre Dame. He was a fifth-year senior this year. He played and started 4 years in the SEC for the University of Florida. Then he had that weird college rule where as long as you graduate on time, you can get granted that fifth year of eligibility and transfer right away, you know, sort of like college free agency, like what happened with Russell Wilson with North Carolina State and Wisconsin.
Yep.
He's only 5'9", 200 pounds. Due to injuries, because everybody on Notre Dame's defense went down with an injury, it seemed like this year. They had to play him a lot at outside corner, which is also what he played a lot at Florida. But what I like a lot about him is, you know, he also has a lot of experience at safety. He has a lot of experience as a slot corner. And I think that's where he's going to excel best and make a living in the NFL is this, as maybe your third safety, if not, you know, with the opportunity to one day maybe be a starting free safety. But the guy you bring in on nickel downs and dime downs to cover the slot, can help out in the run game, can play some free safety. You know, just a nice versatile piece that, you know, a defensive coordinator can use. And also a guy that if you do need to throw somebody on the outside, at least you know he has some experience and he's not going to kill you out there. And then, of course, for, you know, a lot of these non-combine invites, you know, in order to get drafted, you're going to have to show you can help out on special teams. One of the reasons he chose Notre Dame during his college free agency was they promised him they would give him the opportunity to return punts, which is something he always wanted to do in Florida. And he is a dynamic punt returner. Problem is he's not a very smart punt returner, so he had a tendency to – you know, grab balls that he shouldn't, fair catch when, or not, he was almost allergic to the fair catch, I guess, would probably be the best way of putting it. So I think you could work with him there, but as far as watching him with the ball in the hands, I mean, he's special, and I'd be shocked if that guy was not drafted. You know, I thought watching Notre Dame during the year, he was as rock solid a third-round pick as I saw. So I think he's going to go a lot earlier than anybody would think that a non-combine invite went. Next guy is Deontay Greenberry, 6'3", 200 wide receiver from the University of Houston. Might be the best recruit that the University of Houston has ever got. He was a top 50 recruit a few years ago. Everybody thought he was fully committed to the University of Notre Dame. He was a five-star recruit. On signing day at the last minute, he decommitted from them and went to Houston. As a freshman, you know, he had a fine year. But heading into the season, he was on my first-round radar because as a true sophomore, he had 1,300 yards, 82 catches, over 10 touchdowns, and looked like he was going to be, you know, just a future stud that was going to get better and better and had the, you know, the size and the athletic credentials to be a big-time NFL prospect. This year, you know, his numbers were way down. I think he only had about 50 catches, less than 50 catches, less than that. I think he had 800 yards or so and only a couple touchdowns. To be fair to him, Houston had a lot of up-and-down quarterback play this year. But, you know, he still declared early. He probably could have gone back and maybe tried to rehabilitate his value a bit more with a strong senior year. But this is another guy that I would be shocked if he wasn't drafted. Next up is George Farmar. This is kind of a similar to the Greenberry, another wide receiver that has the height, weight, speed that you would expect from a not just an NFL receiver, but an NFL starting wide receiver. He was a five-star, big-time recruit. I think he is the type of guy that would tear up the combine, the type of guy that would make everybody say, who the hell is that? Where did he come from? You know, this guy really looks the part. Unfortunately, he's not going to have that opportunity, and the reason is because he wasn't very productive during his 3 years at USC. To be fair to him, again, they were kind of a train wreck under Lane Kiffin the last few years and really had, you know, up-and-down quarterback play. You know, his first couple of years on campus, but I think he's a nice lesson for young players to learn that just because you're a five-star recruit and everybody's told you since high school you're going to be a future NFL player, just because you have the athleticism. The most important thing is still your you know, your college game tape, and he really could have benefited from going back for a senior year. And then last two guys real quick, Eric Dragan was probably the second best secondary piece for the University of Oregon. He had seven interceptions, led the team in interceptions, and made a lot of big plays. He's not very fast. He doesn't have very good, you know, movement skills like you might expect from an Oregon defensive secondary player. But my God, it's fifth, sixth, seventh round when I need to find a guy that can fill in on special teams. I want a playmaker, a guy that made seven picks for a team that made it all the way to the national championship game. You know, he seems to me to be the perfect guy to be a great special teams player and a guy that you know that you can at least throw in there and, as a backup safety in a pinch. You just don't want to leave him on an island in coverage. And then last but not least, probably the biggest name out of anybody on the list, Devin Gardner, who had a real up-and-down career for the University of Michigan. I mean, I think that guy throws the ball as well as anybody, but he never knows where the ball is going. I don't think I would have invited him to the combine to be a quarterback based upon how his last 2 years at Michigan went. But 6'4", 220, and a guy that played wide receiver when his best friend and former roommate, Denard Robinson, was at school, so he has some experience with the position. I mean, I think he has all the measurables you look for as far as this kind of new-age gadget player, big, tall receiver. I think he's really an interesting athlete and well worth a late-round draft pick as a guy that you might be able to develop into a, you know, at least a contributor gadget player, if not, you know, NFL wide receiver. So I think those are probably the five guys that I would have loved to have seen at the combine this week, especially seeing Gardner run out and, you know, catch passes and see, you know, Cody Riggs go through the 40-yard dash and some of the other areas he had questions with. And, you know, I'd be disappointed I didn't get that opportunity.
Yeah, and I thought that Devin Gardner wasn't terrible during some of the East-West Shrine Game stuff. I didn't think he was awful from, like, the very, very small amount that I saw of him. But I don't know. I agree with you there. It'll be interesting to see what he does or where it goes. I mean, I don't know if I think he's going to get drafted, but I think the name that keeps coming to mind for me is a guy the Giants, you know, brought in and actually made the active roster was Corey Washington. They seem to be of similar build. Even though I think Washington might be a better athlete, but
I like that.
Yeah,
I think he's at the very least worth a look on someone's practice squad because not only can you try to develop him as a receiver, but when you need a scout team quarterback, you can just throw him in there, you know?
Right, right. And God, I got to tell you real quick, though, we have about 2 minutes left. I absolutely love that kid. When I don't know why I'm drawing such a blank with the quarterback's name from Ohio State, it's like on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, that aside, like, he was the first one out there when he got injured and was like, you know, it was like one of those things, like, all right, well, if nothing else, that's a really good dude, and it's good to see, especially with the bad image that football in general has, let alone, not counting the NFL, but just, you know, the image of football players overall. I thought that was a really, really cool gesture.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's why he started rocking number 98 at Michigan, because he was such a great leader and such a, you know, just a great guy. The coaching staff did that because of some famous Michigan player that played back in the day, and it was really a big honor for him to be able to wear that number. So you're right. You know, he's a stand-up guy as there is. Well, while we have time, can I talk about my favorite draft prospect and the guy that I think is the second-best prospect in the draft, even though I wouldn't take him number two overall?
Oh, yeah, Brian, we're good, value. Man. No,
right,
absolutely.
Last but not least,
your time.
My second favorite player in the draft, or the guy I think is the second-best player in the draft, is the best safety prospect to come into the fold since Earl Thomas, and that is my man Landon Collins from the University of Alabama.
Ooh.
I think
a lot of mock drafts have him going to the Giants. I'm very, very excited.
If he went to the Giants, I would be tickled 50 shades of pink if I was you, because he is the real deal. He lays the boom in the run game. He can come into the box and be a man against the run. He's also terrific in pass coverage, a heavy hitter back there. I think he's going to be a tremendous, tremendous pro. You know, I told our buddy Sean, who has a son named Landon, that he's, without question, the second studliest Landon on the planet. And that's really saying something.
It's
so
up there.
I think that Again, I don't know if I'd ever take a safety second overall that wasn't named Sean Taylor or Earl Thomas, but I think he's a better prospect than Calvin Pryor and Clinton Dix were a year ago. And if I was drafting the top 10 and didn't have a serious hole at quarterback and wasn't passing on one of those stud wide receivers, I think I'd be all over this guy, is who I think might be the second safest player in the draft after the aforementioned Leonard Williams.
Nice. I love hearing that, Brian, because most mock drafts I read have the Giants either going with Eric Flowers or Landon Collins. So I'm very excited. Very, very excited.
Yeah, no offense to Eric Flowers, but I would be praying for Landon Collins because I just think that guy's terrific and is going to have an outstanding pro career. I think that, you know, in the NFL, safeties have become just as important, if not more important than corners, if you don't have your Darrell Revis or some superstar out there. I think if you have that stud safety that can clean up messes and do a lot of different versatile things, you know, that's really a key component. I think safeties are, you know, a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for, pressing to the overall success of the D in the NFL than perhaps they are in college. So I think Landon Collins is going to be as great a career as he had at Alabama. I think he's going to be even better as a pro.
Well, listen, that's awesome. I will. That is now officially who I hope the Giants draft. As much as they need help on the offensive defensive line, the Giants are traditionally a best player available. So if he's available with a pick, my fingers are crossed. So
I would hope so. And then you can get Landon Friedrich a Landon Collins jersey and try to irritate the
Well, I might do that actually. Well, I'll get him at least. If they don't get him, I'll still get him a Landon jersey or something Landon can wear. My little one probably going to, you know what? If I can still talk my wife into naming her Eli, I will. I'll just continue doing that. But
I can see Ashley rolling her eyes as we speak.
yeah, she's in the other room, and I think she just took paint off the wall with how hard she rolled her eyes. So, but all right, Brian, it was good talking to you. Good having you on the show. We will do hopefully an hour and a half show sometime. Right before the draft. To dig even deeper than we did today. So I look forward to that and definitely want to talk to you a little more about the NFL season. I actually have a question for you that you don't have to answer now, but is Russell Wilson a $100 million quarterback? And I'm actually leaning towards not really. That we could talk about next time we have you on the show. Which is hopefully as many weeks as we can. So I know you're a busy man with your team and whatnot. So, looking forward to it.
Stress, that's for sure. We're on the championship.
Yeah,
stress.
Hey, listen. Under the Hoodies is pulling for you. It's pulling for your squad. I hope next year we can sponsor.
I hope so too. That would be ideal.
It'd be nice. But all right, buddy. Good talking to you, and we'll talk to you as soon as we can.
Sounds good. Thanks, Phil. Have a good night.
Hey, you too. Bye.
Okay.